Good afternoon. My name is Alicia Charleston. I'm the ALS Registry Coordinator for the Commonwealth. Today I'm speaking about our process for implementing and maintaining the nation's only ongoing and fully funded statewide ALS registry. So first of all, what is ALS and why is it an important disease to track? ALS is a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects one's ability to initiate and control voluntary muscle movement. Patients usually live about 3 to 5 years following their diagnosis. There's no long-term treatment and there's no known cause. There are many theories about what causes ALS. The registry is housed specifically in the Bureau of Environmental Health at the Department of Public Health because many theories do include environmental exposures. The registry was started to track patterns of the disease across the state, and hopefully it will serve as a resource to those studying ALS. So in the late 90s, a study was requested to look at cases of ALS and multiple sclerosis in southeastern Massachusetts. There was a concern about unusual spatial and temporal patterns of this disease, or of these diseases. While the study was in progress, a legislative mandate was passed requiring the state to create an ALS registry, and that was in 2003. In 2005, a feasibility study was completed, followed by two pilot registries to look at the data collection methods from a metropolitan area as compared to the smaller cities and towns. Essex County in 2006 is the cities and towns, and Boston in 2007 is the metropolitan area. And then we had a focus group that was made up of medical professionals and patient advocates to determine what type of information should be collected. So the registry was finally implemented in 2008, collecting records from patients being treated in 2007. And since that time, retrospective data collection has continued annually. And even though the registry has been active since 2008, it was not fully funded until 2013. In that same year, the registry was renamed for our former governor, Paul Cellucci, who lost his battle with ALS. So the registry is run primarily by two people, myself as the coordinator, and we have a public health nurse on staff. Each year, we send letters to hospitals, clinics, neurologists, and vital records to collect the cases. And then we go out and gather the medical records and review them. And finally, they're mailed to contracted neurologists who specialize in ALS to confirm the diagnoses. So here is our data collection verification process. During the first 5 years of the registry, over 3,200 names were reported to us. The next step is to dedupe the cases, and many patients were treated in multiple facilities and by different doctors throughout the course of their treatment. So we get multiple reports. So that brought our case count to 2,300 unique cases. And then we pull the non-eligible cases. So a patient is eligible when they are a Massachusetts resident and alive during the registry time period. We did have people reported to us that had died prior to January 1st, 2007, so they were all excluded. The next step is to have our neurologist verify the cases. And we do use multiple ICD-9 codes that include ALS and other motor neuron diseases to make sure that we are capturing everybody. So finally, that brings us down to about 1,100 cases of confirmed ALS over the first 5 years of our registry. So we are planning to release a five-year report later this summer. Our final results have not been cleared for release, so I am going to present some of our preliminary results. On this graph, the top line in green is the age-adjusted prevalence over the first five years of data. There was a steady increase over the 5 years. Prevalence in 2007 was 6.9 per 100,000, and in 2011 it was 8.4 per 100,000. With additional years of data, we will be able to see if this increase is a trend or if it's just the normal variance in data. The lower line in blue is the incidence for the same time period. It was actually lower in 2011 at 1.6 per 100,000, whereas in 2007 it was 2.4. 2011 is our most recent year of data that's been verified, and the 2012 cases are currently in process of being verified, which might change the incidence for 2011. Diagnosing ALS is difficult. It's usually considered a last case scenario. So from the first mention of ALS to it actually being diagnosed, it can take about 6 months to a year. And then the date of diagnosis usually goes back to that first mention of ALS. So there's likely cases that they'll be found to be diagnosed in 2012, but their date of diagnosis will be in 2011. So here I have two figures describing ALS by sex, as there is a gender difference. The bar graph shows the incidence and prevalence for Massachusetts. And you can see that the females, the orange bar, is slightly lower than the men, which is the blue bar. And this is consistent with the literature. Men are diagnosed with ALS about 1.2 times more than women. In Massachusetts, the incidence for men is 1.14 for every female, and the prevalence is 1.2. The table shows a comparison of the percentages of males and females in our registry as compared to a pilot study, a pilot registry that was done in New Jersey, and then also the national registry. And the national registry shows a greater than expected difference between males and females, while both New Jersey and Massachusetts are pretty similar and pretty consistent with the literature. So we hypothesize that this difference is because of their collection methods. While Massachusetts and New Jersey request information directly from medical sources, the national registry collected data using four national administration databases, including Medicare, Medicaid, the Veterans Health Administration, and the Veterans Benefit Administration. So we also think that their data might not be as comprehensive as ours. So finally, here is a chart comparing the age-specific incidence in Massachusetts and New Jersey. Massachusetts is the green line and New Jersey is the blue. So in both states, you can see that the trend in age is pretty similar. There is a steady increase in incidence by age category until the peak in 70 to 70, category 70, 79. And then there's a sharp decline. So we do plan to continue our registry, and our first report will be out later this year. We'd like to compare our findings with other registries in the United States and Europe. And finally, we do know that a registry and tracking ALS cases is not going to cure this disease, but we hope that outside researchers will be able to make use of our database so that they can find a cure and they can access our that information through the IRB process. So thank you.
I think the agent's first rapid fire, and I hope you all like this process. I think we get a lot of good talks in. So now it's time for questions, and how this should work is when a presenter is up for a question, anybody else with a question for that presenter, just keep asking. Are there any questions coming from the group? So I was going to ask one about the Hawaii study. Is that author still here?
Yeah.
Okay. So you looked nationwide and didn't find a whole lot of other cases, but, right?
I don't remember the exact numbers, but there were cases identified. I think part of the reason why Hawaii was so successful at identifying cases was we do have just the one single liver transplant center, and so all of our hepatitis cases or hepatic failure would be funneled through there, so I think it was a much more concentrated population, and so it made any kind of patterns a little more apparent.
And you were never able to identify any other cofactors that they had in common or appeared to increase risk?
We did some studies into it, but there wasn't anything that jumped out at us, at least. But there was definitely a correlation between the two, which gave us enough strength to embargo the product.
Okay. Question?
I know that there's been hepatic necrosis associated with other dietary supplements that they also never really found an definitive cause, except that, you know, perhaps it was a contaminated batch which had already been used up. Things like that, that, you know, the product is lost, so you can't necessarily monitor it, but I know there's been other dietary supplements.
Yeah, as I said in the presentation, the causal link can be very difficult to identify. I mean, epidemiologically, we can make the association between the two, but the actual mechanism can be difficult to track down.
Any other questions for Boy?
Were there any thoughts about evaluating genetic susceptibility in
individuals? We didn't do any. I think there was some talk about possibly doing it, but on our side, we haven't done any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I had a question for CDC and the lead presentation. And I know most of us would have liked to have heard a little more than the 7 minutes on all of these talks, but I know I would have loved to have heard more about some of these individual studies. But looking at what you've been finding, because you were presenting over multiple studies, I mean, do you have any advice for states in terms of surveillance or targeting populations based on what you've been recently seeing? I hate to put you on the spot, but I did.
Wow. So the CDC is funding states to collect surveillance data now that the budget was reduced dramatically, but it's been built back up. So most of the states that want to continue to collect surveillance data are able to. And then each state has their own regimen of how they see the best, the recommended targeting. Generally, universal screening is not recommended anymore as the blood levels have declined so dramatically and mm-hmm. exposures have been identified. So, for example, in states where there is no, the lead levels are demonstrated to be low, for example, there's a few that are requesting Medicaid waivers where they don't have to test anymore. So basically getting rid of the Medicaid requirement and then just developing the targeted screening based on the housing or the other risk factors that they've identified.
Refugee populations.
There you go, refugee populations or people using Ayurvedic medicines or cosmetics or whatever the population issues are that they might be using. And then in areas where there still is demonstrated need, then generally they work with the pediatric associations and will target the ages 1 and 2 for the mandatory blood lead testing. Generally, urban areas and cities, mm-hmm. and then not so much in areas where there's newer housing.
I mean, I know we have some states in the audience that do screening and some that are struggling with that and not funding. So, are there any questions from folks here on lead, talking about for this presenter? Okay, thank you. So, do we have any other questions for any of the other presenters today? I know we're all tired, my goodness. Okay, well, I want to just thank you all for doing this rapid fire and trying it out in environmental health, and I want to thank all the presenters. It's a little tense when you got a buzzer and a person, you know, threatening to get you off the stage. So thank you all.